Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Laura. I just want to thank you so much for inviting me here. It means, like, the world that I get invited anywhere. I every time I'm asked to speak, I start with a prayer. Believe it or not, this is actually low for me. it's never happened. And the prayer, no, like I have all the height in my family. So unless I'm wearing heels, I can't see over the podium. So I start with a prayer every single time I share, and it goes, please God, help me get out of my head and into my heart and let the words that I speak be yours. And then I figure I'm ready. And God will take care of it. So congratulations to the chip takers. I love that. David, 7 days. That's so rad-tastic. You're probably coming out of your skin. And I get it. Trust me. With a big smile on my face, right? But wanting to die at 7 days sober. I'm here with my good friend Donna. And I just want to thank you for coming with me. It's such a privilege to get to travel with my friends in sobriety, right? And to the committee, please. The food was great, and I just feel really looked after, so thank you. I grew up in an alcoholic home. Like many of us, my mother was 16 years old when she had me, and she was brutally addicted to drugs and alcohol. And as a result of growing up in that home, I ended up experiencing things that no little girl should experience. I was brutally abused on a regular basis. I was just thinking, I don't want to harm anybody by sharing my story, but like it's the only one I've got, right? So I just want you to know when I share from the heart, and I also want you to know that as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have healed. And it's such a blessing. It's such a blessing not to walk around with fear and resentment and anger about my past. That's a miracle of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to tell you it's possible. So I was brutally abused as a child. My mother says today that she made Hitler look kind, and that is an understatement. She allowed things to happen to me at a young age that should never happen. And when I found alcohol at 5 years old, it's so insane to me sometimes, right? I have a 20-year-old daughter and a 30-year-old daughter, and in a million years, it would not be okay for them to drink, right, when they were 5 years old. But in my home, my mom was brutally addicted to drugs and alcohol, and it was available to me. And if that sounds insane to you, it sounds absolutely insane to me too. But that's the life I grew up in. And I don't believe that I drank alcoholically when I first found alcohol at five. Five is the first memory I have of being blotto drunk. My mom was playing caps with me. We were drinking baby duck wine. I was vomiting. And she was cleaning me up just to put me back in the party. But I know I drank prior to that age. When I found alcohol, I don't believe I drank alcoholically. I believe that it was a way to, like, it was some respite, right? It was a way to get through what was going to happen, because something was always going to happen that day or that night to me. In my home, my mom was exactly the way it's described in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. When she picked up the first drink, she never knew when she was going to stop. And what that looked like is she would abandon us all the time. And so at 5, 6, 7 years old, she'd leave for a night, she'd leave for a week. I remember when I was 7 years old, she was gone for 3 weeks, and I was trying to hold it together so nobody would know my mom was gone. You know, when I was 7 years old, I was allowed to smoke. I was selling drugs by the time I was 9 years old. It's the world that I grew up in, and so I describe it to you because as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't live like that at all, nor have my children grown up in that environment. And it is such a miracle. And I also want to tell you, my mom's okay with me sharing all that because she's 27 years clean and sober today, and she is like the best mom in the whole world, and I never knew that would be possible because there was a moment in time where I didn't want her in my life. She was evil, and she was self-centered to the core, and I never imagined that I would allow this woman around my children. But she's an outstanding grandmother, and that's a result of you guys, right? So I started leaving home at a really young age. I did what I just wanted to get out. I needed to get out. And the first time they found me, I had run away. I was close to the highway, and I was hitchhiking. I was 4 years old, and that pattern just continued, right? I tried to look after my baby sister. We both of us would drink and drug in our home because it would just like I'd pass out, and the stuff that happened to me, I could get through. And you know, I ran away seriously when I was 11 and 12 years old, and meaning serious, like I'm never going back, right? And I kept getting brought back, and I don't know how we didn't get taken away. And by the time I was 14, I ended up on the streets in what we call in Vancouver the downtown east side, and it's a scary, scary place. And I did whatever. By now I was a daily drinker, and I didn't even know. I had no idea. I don't know anything about alcoholism at this point, but I had to drink daily. And you know, I love how I thank God every day for Bill's story in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because my story is exactly his. I couldn't see it when I got here because all I could see is this, like, you know, 1930s stockbroker dude that, like, I have nothing in common with that, right? But when I started to see the similarities, I started to see that when he picked up the first drink, he didn't always want to drink. He meant not to drink today, you know, and I had many instances like that. And then he had no control over when he was going to stop. And what really stood out for me when I arrived to the room of Alcoholics Anonymous is that when he added sedatives to the mix, which I'm just going to say are drugs, when he added sedatives to the mix and morphine, it's in his story, he spiraled to a bottom that he couldn't get out of. And that's exactly my story. I don't need to go into the details of that, but I'm telling you, thank God Bill wrote that, because it gave me a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I didn't get sober in my teens. I kept doing what I'd always done. I picked up a drink. I completely decimated my life, and then I'd run away, because I always blamed everything but me for the reason that things were happening in my life that became a disaster. It was very easy to convince you, based on the life I had grown up in, that I was this victim, right? And that everybody, I had always been harmed, and that gave me a license to lie, to cheat, to manipulate, to steal, to drink. Right? And it just seemed so normal. Of course I would drink. Of course I would be like this. And I didn't know there was a way out. And, you know, I traveled all over Canada in the beginning because every time something bad happened, I left. And we use crazy language in here that seems like a foreign language. So if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous and I say stuff you don't ask or don't understand, please come and ask. But one of the things we say is we use the term geographical cure a lot. And what that looked like for me is, as I just described, every single time I decimated my life, I blamed the area I was living in, the bar I was hanging out with, the people, and I just had to get away. So I would leave the province, and I moved to the U.S. And anyways, when I was 16 years old, I ended up in Ontario, which is the eastern part of Canada, and I met the man that I was going to take hostage, and he was my husband. He became my husband. Like, the poor guy didn't know what hit him, right? I met him in a bar, and I was dared to, like, so embarrassing, right? Dared to take him home. I can't believe that just came out of my mouth at a podium. And seemed like a good idea after about 14 shots, right? And the guy, he couldn't even speak English, right? Like, awesome. We don't need to talk. you know, that was my life, right? Like, I'm so, the lovely thing about being sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous is I've done a whole bunch of things I'm not proud of, and absolutely nothing I'm ashamed of today. Nothing I'm ashamed of. And so I took that man hostage. He didn't even know my age, right? He just assumed I was in a bar. The drinking age up there is 19. And I let him continue to assume, just never thought it would come up, right? And he asked me to marry him, and I turned him down. And I got pregnant, and he asked me to marry him, and I turned him down. I couldn't imagine anybody could love me. Because as much as I presented on the outside as this hip, slick, and cool, you know, I thought I was acting like an adult, I was terrified inside. I had no self-esteem. I was afraid all the time, and I had to drink not to feel some of that. And, you know, I'll never forget the day that I said yes, finally. He had asked me, it was the fifth time he asked me to marry him, and I said yes, and I thought I was being clever, right? I was crafty, and I thought, okay, so we'll get married on my 18th birthday, then I don't need my parents' signature, right? Because I'll be 18, and you don't need their signature once you're 18. And it turned out that you have to get a marriage license 3 days before you're going to get married. So I had to go track my parents down and then tell this man that I'd been with for a couple of years, a little younger than you might have thought. he's 26 years old, and he's been with me a couple of years, so he figures I'm about 21, and I'm 17. very pregnant, and like I said, I took that poor man hostage, and we had a baby together, that was the best thing I'd ever done. I never even knew it was possible to love somebody that much. And you know, that baby couldn't keep me sober. The day I had her, I stayed sober. The day I got out of the hospital, I picked up the first drink and didn't come home that night. I couldn't. I had to get drunk. I had to have more. And I didn't know what was going on. And so because I didn't know I was an alcoholic, I just felt bad. I just felt ashamed. I felt dirty. I felt like a terrible mom. And you know what helped? More. More of anything. More of anything. And especially an escape from that world. He was a really good man and a really good dad. And I manipulated and conned him into believing that it was Ontario that was the problem. And if I could just get out of Ontario and go back home to Vancouver, then everything would be okay. He paid me to abandon them. You know, like, he paid for me to do that because I conned and manipulated him out of the money. And I ended up back in Vancouver, and I did what I'd always done. I picked up the first drink and I couldn't stop. And I continued that pattern. And I just did anything to get more. I ended up back on the streets in Vancouver, and I ended up in a pretty serious situation where other people told me what I was going to do on a daily basis. I didn't get to eat, sleep, go to the bathroom, or use and drink unless I got told I could. And I had to trade my body to be able to accomplish what I needed to do. And I ended up doing the same stuff I'd always done. I actually ended up in the U.S. And lo and behold, I ended up on the streets in Hawaii, and I my life was just black, and the only respite I ever got was when I was completely drunk, and I was scared all the time. I shook all the time. I was on the streets, and I don't know if you've ever been out there and you've had a man telling you what you got to do. It's the scariest place in the world. We were talking about it earlier, and sometimes I forget how scared I was and what I would do to get more alcohol. Sometimes I forget that I made choices like abandoning my child and living that life rather than stopping drinking and drugging. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. And you know, in Hawaii in 1991, I ended up at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had overdosed. And I ended up in a hospital, and they bussed me once I was better to a detox. And at the detox, they took us to a meeting. And I'm telling you, the meeting in my memory had like 400 people in it, right? And it might have, right? But I don't know. They ask if anybody's new or coming back, and they force you to put your hand up, and everybody cheers and shouts. And I thought, oh my God, man, I just had a really bad night. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but like, if so-and-so had just shown up with the stuff they said they'd show up with, I would not be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had no desire to get sober, and I had no idea what the heck was going on here. I was just, it felt like a cult. It was just scary and weird, and I wanted no part of it, and I certainly hadn't planned to end up with you, but the seed was planted. And I ended up over doing what I'd always done and doing that geographical cure thing, and Hawaii got too bad, and I flipped back to Vancouver, and I ended up in Osaka, Japan. And Osaka, Japan, I lived there for 3 years, and I got paid to drink, literally. I used to call my family to make them jealous. I was getting paid $50 an hour to hostess, which means you're a sit-down drunk. You sit down at a table and you pour their alcohol and you got to drink it with them so they can get through their bottles, so they have to buy more. And I thought, I have died and gone to heaven. I'm like 21 years old, and I'm getting paid $50 an hour to drink. I literally would call my mom to make her jealous. I was like, it was absolute insanity. And, you know, we were blackout drunk every single night. I didn't remember what I did, and I did despicable, demoralizing, terrible things that caused me to come to and need another drink. And I couldn't stop, and I didn't know I could stop. And in Japan is where the message of Alcoholics Anonymous was carried to me. I met a man the beginning of the night wasn't a blackout, but I met a man in a pretty famous rock band, and he was the keyboard player, and he thought we were going to go home that night. And by the end of the night, I was with the lead singer, and we were walking down the hallway of the hotel room to go to the hotel room, and a case of beer came flying by my head. And I look back, and it's the keyboard player, and I go into a blackout, and the next morning I come to, and my phone's ringing, and he's like, Letitia, because that was my name in Japan, Letitia. And he said, I belong to a fellowship. It's a 12-step program back in North America. We're at the airport. We're heading back to L.A., but he said, what I did last night was not okay, and I need to make an amend to you. Now, I'm coming out of a blackout. I'm trying to figure out which one he is. I'm like, you know, what is an amend? Like, who uses language like that, right? Like, I have no idea what he's talking about. I vaguely remember the case of beer, but I had a good night, apparently, right? So, no big deal. And he asked me if he can stay in touch with me. And, like, I'm no dummy, right? I'm blonde, but not dumb. He's in a famous rock band. Call me anytime, dude, you know? Like, okay. So he's heading back to L.A., and I ended up heading back to Vancouver, and I picked up ways and means of doing things that spiraled me to a really black place. I was 60 pounds lighter than I am today. I had scabs all over my body in a four-month period that happened to me, and I was back on the streets, and this man would call me on a regular basis, and I would call him. And not one time did he say, you should go to a meeting, you should go to a 12-step program. He started sharing his story, and I understand today that that's how we carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't shame people into this program. We share our experience, strength, and hope, and maybe they'll gain some trust. And over the course of 4 months, that's what happened to me. I'd call him and he'd just listen to my garbledygook, you know? I'd be high and he'd listen and he would share his story with me. And I started to trust him just a little bit to tell him some of the truth about the circumstances that I was in. Because he was talking my language. He was like, he seemed to know the space that I was in and the feelings that I had. And I had never met anybody that had been where I was and had recovered. And he was sharing this, and one day I was homeless. I'd been up for about, I don't know, 16 days, something like that. And I was in a crack house and I was talking to him, and he said to me, you know, have you ever thought about going to detox? And I thought, well, yeah, you know, like my mom always went there and grandpa always went there, and like, but here's what I knew. So remember, I'm in psychosis. I'm as sketchy as it can be. I'm 60 pounds lighter. I can't bend my elbows because there's scabs all over them. And he asked me if I could go to detox. And I thought, well, if you tell people you're going to detox, right, because this is the deal, you don't get in right away. But if you tell enough people, especially all those people that aren't talking to you anymore, that you're going to change your life around, that you're going to go to detox, I could probably get some money. Right? Just to tie me over, right? Like, you know, and I start this manipulation and this con in my head again, and I think, oh yeah, detox sounds like a good idea. Can you send me $20? You know? Just till I get in, because I'm not going to get in today, right? But I'll call, right? And you know, I called what was Pender Detox. It's no longer there, but I called Pender Detox, and you know what they said? They said, be there in an hour. From that day till this, that was about 1993, from that day till this, that has never happened to a single person I know that has called detox. They have to call again, they got to call for a week, they got to prove they're, like, they said be there in an hour, and I guess in my sketchiness, I had called an aunt that was no longer speaking to me to ask her for a little money, because I was about to call detox, and I would just need to survive till I got in, and she showed up on the doorstep of the crack house I was at, and she bundled me up, and she said, I got there, Laura, and you said you had things to do. And, you know, I hadn't slept in days. I hadn't eaten in days. I was in no state to make any decisions. And she bundled me up to a cab, and she brought me to detox. And, you know, I slept. Oh, my God, I slept. I did not go to detox to get sober. I went to detox and agreed finally, because I owed just enough people just enough money, that detox finally seemed like a good alternative. I was not coming to get sober. I still didn't understand about Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know what? I got there, and I slept, and I ate, and they kept me there for a while, and members of Alcoholics Anonymous brought a meeting in. And I had no idea what you were talking about. And you started to speak my language, and you started to speak the language of the heart, and you started to tell the truth. And I started to listen just a little bit. And you said things like, if you want what we have, and I am not going to lie, the men that brought the meeting in for detox had leather jackets and triple-soled Daytons, and they were hot. And I wanted that, little of that. That is exactly what got me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep sending good-looking men to detox. I'm telling you, whatever it takes, I do not care. I do not believe I gotta want it to get here. I don't believe I got to want it. It's whatever gets my butt in the chair. And that is the God's honest truth. I came for the good-looking men. I couldn't find them once I got here. No. Totally kidding. I meant those particular men. Anyway, so I got, they suggested that I go to a treatment facility, a recovery house, which is not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it was a place that I could get some days back to back and start to learn about 12-step recovery, start to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got into this recovery house and I started to get 12-stepped into recovery. And they said all kinds of things, right? They said get a big book and a sponsor and a home group and a step group and use them all and become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wanted Gold Star Recovery. I was sleeping in a clean bed for the first time in forever. I went with a shopping bag. My aunt had brought me some clothes. I had like a Safeway bag of stuff when I arrived there. And people were nice to me. And I just started to get Gold Star Recovery, you know? I just did everything you told me to do. And they suggested that I go to a treatment center, and back then it was a co-ed treatment center that I went to. And I did what every broken woman I've ever sponsored in Alcoholics Anonymous has done from that moment to this, under 30 days sober in a co-ed facility. I met the love of my life. And I will tell you this, I thank God every day for that relationship as I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. I'm also super grateful for good sponsorship, because she showed me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it says, we are not arbiters of anybody's sex conduct. It says it so clearly, and yet I hear in these rooms all the time me telling you whether you should get in or out of a relationship. You know what my sponsor said? She said, that is not my business. I did not get sober to run your life. I can share my experience, though, and here's how it might go down. You may harm somebody seriously in that relationship. You may do something you end up ashamed of. You may get your heart broken, and all of those things may cause you to want to drink, but I can help you stay sober through any and all conditions. Not my business to run your life. And I thought, oh my gosh. I had no idea that was going to be the response. I thought you guys, I came in here, got sober, and you ran my life. And she reminded me, I am an alcoholic woman. You do not want me running your life. Trust me on this one, because I will run with it, right? And she said, and I thank God for that relationship, because I walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous when I got out of that treatment center still broken, right? And had I not been in that relationship, I would have slept with all of you. I would not have picked favorites to not have feelings, right? Men, women, just bring it, because that was what I knew, right? If I have feelings and I don't have God and I'm not going to drink, then I'm going to do what I have to do to get out of these feelings. And so that relationship saved me from making more mistakes in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not suggesting any of you are making mistakes. I'm just saying I would have felt more shame, more guilt. And that man was lovely. You know, he was lovely. And we stayed in a relationship for 3.5 years in the room sober of Alcoholics Anonymous. We went to Friday night meetings, was our home group. And we went to, back then, you know, in the early 90s, I don't know how you do it down here, but Vancouver's kind of changed a bit. And back then, they really encouraged couples to go to meetings together, get your own home group or share a home group, get your own step group, get men's and women's step groups, bring the Al-Anons out. Like, it was an amazing experience for me. And as a result of being in that relationship, I hooked in with the old timers. And, you know, when I first started going to out, the other thing is, you guys wouldn't know this reference, but the man that I fell in love with was from a place called Surrey. And just trust me, I've done my time in Surrey. I don't have to go back. But I did what every alcoholic does, right? I moved in with him, of course. Whether he lived in Surrey or not, I was going. And so we end up in Surrey together, and it turns out there's great Alcoholics Anonymous there, and I hooked in with the old timers, and the old timers would drive me to meetings, right? And they never let me leave a meeting without a plan for a meeting tomorrow. Not one time in my early years of sobriety. And I will tell you, they did things, though, a little bit different back then. I would come to the meeting, and I would sit at the back, because I was cool, right? I was super cool. And I'd sit at the back of the room, right? And they'd grab me by the ear, and they'd bring me up to the front of the room. We don't reserve seats in Canada, right? Unless an old-timer says somebody's sitting there, right? And they would pull me up, and I would be super offended by that, right? Like, that is, like, I was fragile. You should not do this to me. It's very embarrassing. And then I would realize, right? that was my ride home. And so I'm just going to sit there and shut up and like listen to the meeting. And what I understand now, and my favorite seat is in the front of the room, because if I'm back there, I'm looking at all of you, I'm checking you out, I'm making judgments, I'm in my head. If I'm in the front, I'm just here. And it's my favorite place in the room now. And you know, I was a super self-centered alcoholic when I got here. Okay. And I know you've never done this, right? But I used to come into the meeting, and when the meeting would end, right? I was a smoker back then. I don't smoke anymore. So the meeting would end and I would go to race outside to have my cigarette. And literally I've had old timers throw empty ashtrays at my head. And I've been like, what the heck is that? That's pretty, I'm new, right? I'm fragile. And they would say, listen, princess, you have the disease of alcoholism. That means you are a self-centered little. And they would say, who's picking up your chair? You are that self-centered that you're going to come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and someone else is picking up your chair. We're going to start treating the disease of alcoholism and you're going to start picking up your chair. And I am telling you, that has saved my life. Because alcohol is but a symptom. It says it in our book. My disease is about self-centeredness and selfishness. And I do not leave a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and allow you to pick up my chair. I don't need you to. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I pick up my chair. And I didn't know how profound that was going to be. I didn't know that that was a start. That was a beginning for me to change the way I thought. And I always only thought about me, my needs, my wants, right? That's all I ever thought about. And they used to make me wash coffee cups. Super offended, right? Like, coffee cups, right? Like, this is crap. And what I didn't know is they were brilliant, right? Because at that time, I couldn't look you in the eye. I couldn't have a conversation with you. I had no self-esteem. And I would wash coffee. I get so emotional about this because I can remember how that felt, where I'd come into a meeting, I'd be looking at the ground. I would hope somebody would notice me, but I couldn't, you know, I could never have a conversation with you. And I'd be standing in there washing coffee cups with another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the next meeting I would go to, perhaps I'd see them. And I could raise my chin up just a little bit and look you in the eye and say hello to one person that now I know. Knew because we'd had a conversation. I didn't know in their wisdom they were getting me involved in service. And service, like there's, you know, I diagnose people all the time. And what I mean by that is when people say they're off the rails or they're feeling, I'm like, what are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? How much are you getting out of yourself? Because that's a part you can't skip to have it all. There's so much available here, but it's really only available in my experience if you have all three sides of the triangle. And so, you know, they got me involved, and I never got to pick a service position until recently. Like, I'm not kidding. We go to business meetings and, you know, people vote, right? No, not me. You're going to be the secretary. And I'd be like, for how long? Until we say you're not. Like, you know, like that's how it operated. I was 20 something. These guys were 40, 50 years sober, right? They just told me what to do. They didn't have all these like rules and, you know, like stuff. It was like, we'll tell you, we're going to get you sober. We're going to get you sober. And they included me in a community. They didn't say crap like your sponsor's not your friend. They showed me in the big book where it says, if you do this right, you will have gained a friend. It says it in there. Doesn't say that I'm the guru if I sponsor you, and I'm the teacher. I'm another alcoholic. I'm not doing you a favor. You're doing me a favor. It says it in this book, right? And I believe in this book. I believe in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it doesn't say wait, by the way, and rest on your laurels. Oh, I love this one. Newton Bill, who I'll probably cry when I talk about him because he just passed away, and I was holding his hand when he died, and he was 66 years sober. 96 years old and 66 years sober. And that man loved the heck out of me. He cared more about my recovery than my feelings often. And he said, what the hell? He said, people come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they spend, what, a year to find our inner child, you know? He said, sweetheart, you've been sober 3 weeks. Go get a frickin' lunchbox. Yeah. Go stop taking from the world. You're sober now. Go get a job, get a big book, and start giving back. And I'm telling you, I was appalled by that. It's just so offensive, right? Like, it's like I'd like to just get settled a little bit, you know? And he didn't give me the opportunity for that. That has saved my life, right? I had to go get a job. And you know what? When I... When I got to Surrey, I prayed for a job, and my phone rang. I kid you not. My phone rang, and a guy I'd been in treatment with said, "Hey, I got this buddy that's got this hot dog stand, and he's looking for someone to sell hot dogs." And I was like, I just prayed, like within the 5 minutes. I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. And I'm like, oh my God, work at a hot dog stand? Like, no way, man. Are you kidding? I don't sell hot dogs, right? I have no experience, a grade 9 education, right? I've lived on the streets for almost a decade, but I'm not selling hot dogs. And I hang up the phone and I hear a voice. And the voice says, "So now you're gonna get picky." Choosy was the word I heard. And I just got goosebumps because I'm telling you, I sat there with this lump going, oh my God, I'm going to sell hot dogs. And I called my friend back and I went, you know, I literally plane trained, I was living in Surrey, which is not Vancouver, okay? So like $35 a day is what they paid me for 8 hours of work. I had no money left at the end of my shift because I bought a hot dog to eat, right? I needed smokes for my old man and I, right? We needed coffee that night at the meeting, right? Starbucks, of course, right? And I almost had no money left, but I worked, right? I worked and I didn't know that was gonna start to develop some self-esteem in me. I had no idea, right? That just being able to afford my own cigarettes was gonna develop self-esteem. And I took that job and 3 weeks, I joined an Avelco, which is not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's a way to do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in there I met people from other 12-step fellowships. And one of the women, she was driving me every week to this 12-step thing. We were going through the big book and doing it this way. And she had a new car, right? And she wasn't from our fellowship. She was from another one. And one day, about 3 weeks after I was selling hot dogs, she asked me if I would meet her in a park. And at that point, I still looked in the mirror and saw you, junkie whore. I still felt like that many, many days, right? I still had not enough self-esteem, and I thought my head, because like my head will create stories, right? The moment I think, we were talking about this earlier because I just heard it said so articulate a couple days ago on a podcast, but like as soon as I'm in fear, my head creates stories. I need bad guys and good guys, and like, you know, it's creating a story, right? So I'm creating this story. I'm convinced that because now she's heard my story and how dirty I was and how repulsive I had become on the streets of Vancouver, that she didn't want me in her car anymore. So I'm courageously going to meet her at this park because I'm thinking she needs a public place. She's going to tell me, it's okay, I can handle it. It's not a big deal. It's no big deal. And I get to the park and she offers me a job. She said, "I talked to a colleague of mine and it's only for 30 days, but it's customer service." And I went back to my group. She said, "You know, but you're going to have to put together a resume." So I went back to my group, right? And I've been being the secretary, and I've been doing jobs there. And they sat me down, and it was beautiful. There was a member of Al-Anon there, and there were three or four members of my group, and they sat me down, and I had the courage to really tell them what I'd done, right? And so they said, "Well, honey, you're going to be fabulous at customer service and sales." they were my references. You know, they white lied a little bit on my resume. They helped me put a resume together, and they said I've been working at the group and doing volunteer work, and you know, they were my references, and nobody had ever stood up for me like that. Nobody had ever helped me be something, you know, at that point. And I got this job, and it was supposed to be for 30 days, and 2 years later, I was the purchasing manager of Canada, and I have a grade 9 education. There has to be a God, right? I was going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was finding a power greater than myself. And there just has to be a power greater than me because there was a plan that I knew nothing about. All of a sudden, I had my office, my own office, right? Like, it was crazy, right? How does this happen, right? I could go from there to here. And, you know, and I got to tell you that when I first went through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sitting in step two, and I was the girl that came to meetings, and if you said God, the word God, I kicked chairs, and I walked out of the meeting. I was not joining no cult, right? I got nowhere else to go, but I'm not joining a cult. And old-timers would follow me out with that kind of self-centered behavior, and they would say, "Hey, sweetie, you just keep coming back. You just keep coming back." And I thought in step two it used to say, in step two I found God. I could tell you who my God was. I knew exactly how to describe my God. And I could connect with that God on a regular basis. And I was freaking out. I'm like, this is not happening for me. I don't have God. I don't have God in my life. I believe in you guys, right? But I don't have a God. I don't have your God. I don't have any of that. And it would freak me out. I thought, I'm going to die. And Newton Bill one day, he said, what the heck is going on? And I told him, I said, it's crazy. I can't do step two. I can't get step two. I don't know how to do it. He says, where the heck did you hear that? Where does it say that in this book? And he sat me down and he said, okay, let me just check in with you. He said, did you make the sun come up today? No. Do you think a power bigger than Lara maybe made the sun come up today? Okay, I'll give you that. I believe in energy, right? And he said, listen, and he opened up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and he showed me where it says it's just in the seeking. Step two is just about the willingness to seek. It's not in the finding. It doesn't say that. One day, if I keep doing this work, I'll find God in my heart through being of service to you. Nah, I didn't step two the first time around. Probably, some do. Show me the spiritual experience. He said, you're just going to have a change. Eventually, if you do this, you'll have a change. And that's enough. No burning bushes necessary. And that was like, and then he said, can you do, I didn't want to pray because that was like gross to me. pray to what, right? But he said, could you wake up in the morning and could you just say help? And at night when your head hits the pillow, could you just say thank you? That's it. And I got off the debate committee because what I wanted to do, right, of course, I'm alcoholic and I'm debating and is to what, right? To what? And how's that going to go down? And just stopped. I just stopped. I just got willing, right? I just got willing to seek and willing to do things differently. And I said, yeah, I can do help and thank you. And you know what? That's been my favorite prayer my entire sobriety until the last couple years of Bill's life. Until he said, I changed my prayer. I changed my prayer. And I said, what, Bill? He said, best prayer. Because he used to say that was the best prayer you can ever do. And he said, best prayer you can ever, ever do is just thank you, thank you, thank you. Every day. And that was the prayer he used for the last couple years of his sobriety. And I believe him. I believe him because I have a life that is worth thanking. You know, I'd love to tell you that I stayed sober from that moment till this, but that was not my experience. My life started to get really big. I ended up leaving that relationship. Turned out I still had a bit of a gaping wound inside when that relationship ended. It really did end fairly lovingly, you know. I still had this gaping wound, and my life was starting to get big, and my career was taking off, and I met another man that was a really cruel, cruel, cruel man, and we were going to split up at 3 months, but I got pregnant, and he wanted the baby, and I'm forever grateful I have this 20-year-old, but I did not want another child at that. I certainly did not want it with this man, and we ended up trying, because I felt like I owed the child that, and my life became a bit of a living hell, and we started a business together that became very successful. All of a sudden, I was in investment banking and super successful, and I lived in a massive home with a nanny and a housekeeper and, you know, a pool, and I only tell you that because my head, without constant Alcoholics Anonymous, it's my medicine. It's part of my medicine. I wasn't taking it. I stopped going to meetings. My business, my life got really big, right? My head, without you, started to think like this. I don't think I'm alcoholic. No way. Every time somebody talked about step one, didn't they always say that when they drank, they did really crappy things? And that was the unmanageability, and I'm not unmanageable anymore. Nope. If you grew up the way I grew up, you would have drank and drugged the way I drank and drugged, so I'm obviously not. This is what I heard. I'm sure that you actually described step one in the manner that it is intended from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I used to believe that what step one said is I got drunk and then I harmed everybody around me. I got drunk, I didn't pay my rent. I got drunk, I beat my wife. I got drunk, I disappeared from my family. I got drunk, I stole. That's what I thought step one said. It's been explained to me now, and I don't know what your version is, but what's been explained to me is that step one, the unmanageability that we're referencing is my thinking. And I may always be powerless over alcohol with the brain that I have that thinks this time will be different, which means I am going to need continuous sobriety in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But at that moment, 2 years, no meetings, not hearing about the consequences of what happens. Do you know non-alcoholics get DUIs, beat their wives, and steal? They do it, right? That is not what makes us alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic is that I get an obsession to drink. And I start thinking, even though it's never worked out for me and I have no evidence to prove that this time will be different, I believe that I will control and enjoy my drinking and that this time will be different. And you know what? Two and a half years later, not for any reason either. Not really. Not for any reason. Good day, bad day. I was a little pissed off at him. He wasn't home yet. So I went and found him at a bar with the baby and walked in and ordered a martini. Didn't even occur to me that I was alcoholic. It really didn't. I looked at my family and I said, you know what? No, I'm not going to drink like, I would never drink like that again. Look at me. I have a life. I would never exchange this life for the way I used to be. I would never end up back downtown. Are you kidding me? I'm a member of my community today, you know? And I was in my early 30s by then, and I picked up the first drink, and I did not drink alcoholically the first time I drank. That allergy didn't kick in for me that first time, and all that did was fed the denial, which said, I'm not an alcoholic. It's so obvious to me. And I mean, non-alcoholic people don't have to run around telling everybody that they're not alcoholic, just for the record, right? I'm like, okay. Yeah, hey, no, don't worry about it. I'm not alcoholic. I can drink, right? You know, we had that conversation a lot, right? And pretty soon, you know, I'm throwing cocktail parties, and very, very quickly I'm having cocktail parties on Tuesdays because I need drinks, right? I need to drink, and pretty soon I'm a daily drinker again, a bottle of wine, two bottles of wine a night. And one night at a party, somebody offered me a little something-something. And 4.5 years, I completely decimated my life. I could not stop once I'd started. I could not stop once I'd started, even though every day that I came to, I meant to. Every single day I was going to quit for my babies. They deserved more. They deserved better. They'd go to sleep. I would crawl in their rooms and steal money from their piggy banks to go get more. I would leave saying I was going grocery shopping and come home Monday, you know? I was abandoning them. It got to the point where I had lost absolutely everything physically. I had a vehicle that was repossessed. I had an eviction notice on my door that I kept tearing off. I had a dog that I couldn't walk, so there was feces in the carpet. I was crawling around, picking gyprock off the carpet, and I couldn't stop. And, you know, and I desperately wanted to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's what happened. While I was out, Newton Bill called me. Every 2 or 3 months he would call, and not one time did he shame me. He never once said, you should come back. We miss you in AA. Because you know what that would have done? It would have had me stopping answering the phone. I would have felt too much shame and guilt to answer that. He called to tell me he loved me. Every 2 or 3 months, 4 months, whatever. For 4.5 years, that man called me just to say, I just want to, hey, babe, just called to tell you I love you. That's it. And he gave me the privilege of being an alcoholic that drinks. Because that's sometimes... Why is everybody shocked in Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholics drink? Like, you know, some of us get sober and some of us go back out and people go, I can't believe they're drinking. No, the miracle is that they're staying sober, right? Like, they will drink again if they don't have any insurance between them and the next drink. And that is not a shameful thing. That is what alcoholics do, right? That my experience has been loving with the old timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. They have loved me into sobriety. And you know, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous finally. And I did what I'd always done. I sat in the back of the room and you said, is there anybody new or coming back? And I'd raise my hand and I'd say, I'm coming back. And you would come up to me and you would say, we want to help. I'd say, no, You're cute. But, you know, I was sober for many, many years, so I know what I have to do. I'm going to get a big book and a sponsor and a step group and a home group. I'm good. Thank you very much. Like an ego that wouldn't have fit in this room, right? My ego was not smashed at all. I thought I knew how I was going to do sober, right? And I was just like, I had this wall between me and you and a big, huge ego, and I couldn't get sober. I'd get 2 days and I'd get drunk and you'd offer to help and I just couldn't accept your help. And I've been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous to actively live these steps, not just say them. And the way that I live step one is that if I'm powerless, it may indicate that I need a power. Powerless, need power. The way to the power is going to be asking for help. That's what my sponsor said. We begin by asking for help. And I couldn't do that in the first couple of years of coming in and out of here. I should have died, right? Last week, I had 3 people I know that died because they chose to go back out. One of them had 8 or 9 years, went back out, thought he'd come back on Monday, right? He's dead. It's so sad, right? I should have died. And kept coming in and out. And one day they talked me into going to a women's retreat, which is, again, not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's a place in Vancouver, close to Vancouver, sort of, where they go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also where all the shiny, happy, skinny bitches hang out. Yeah. You know, when you're 26, 27, you're 27 days sober, and this is like this gaping wound inside, and you know they all love each other, they all get along, they all feel really good about themselves, right? Which I've since discovered is so not the case of females in Alcoholics Anonymous. But like, I don't fit in with them at all, right? I don't fit in with them at all. They're all shiny, happy, and bikinis. Like, who does that, right? And I'm like fixing to go get a drink because I'm in bumchuck Port Moody, right? Which is a bit of a hitchhike to get back. Remember, I have no vehicle, right? And the woman that's my sponsor today that I knew from the first time I came in, I had seen her. But I didn't have the courage to say hello because if she had not recognized me, I didn't have enough self-esteem to withstand that. So I thought if I said hello and she didn't know who I was, I'd be decimated, right? So I'm making a plan. I'm going to hitchhike back to Vancouver. I need a drink so bad. These feelings are more. And I've been in and out for 2 years now, and I can't do it. I just can't do it anymore. I'm just going to throw in the towel. And I walk down these 2 steps, and she's standing there with her sponsor, who I think at the time her sponsor had 30 years, and she had 20 at the time, or 25. I don't know, something, right? And I walk down a couple of stairs, and she yells out my name. It makes me so grateful all the time that she saw me. She had seen me walking around the day before, and she looked at me and knew I was hurting because she pays attention. Because that's why she comes to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. She doesn't come so she can get a message. She comes so she can be of service. She comes early. She pays attention. She looks around the room to see if anybody new or old might look a little bit off, to see if she can maybe be of service. And she did that day for me. And she called my name and she asked me to come over and she asked how I was doing. And for the first time in so long, I said, I'm not doing good. And if this is sober, I can't do it anymore. I just can't do it. I'd rather die. I'd just rather die. I gotta have a drink. And her sponsor said, you know what? Margareta needs your help. She's gonna sponsor you. I've never been able to pick anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And Margaret said, I'm willing to sponsor you, but you're going to have to act like this is your very first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you're going to have to act like it's a clean slate, and we're going to go through that big book like it's the very first time, and I just want you to shut up and listen. And you know what? Best advice I ever had. I had to stop thinking I knew anything about how to get sober. I had to just stop. I just had to, like, it's so much easier this way, by the way. What I was doing was killing me and everybody around me. I was continuing to harm the people in my life because I wasn't sober. And sober doesn't mean just not drinking. Sober means not screaming at my kids. Sober means not lying. Sober means not stealing. Sober means being a good employee, right? There's all kinds of pieces. I couldn't be any of that the way that I was doing it. And, you know, she started sponsoring me. She started taking me through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we started at the preface and the forewords. You know what it says there? I don't know if you're following the instructions, right? But right in the beginning, it says they frantically went searching for alcoholics and that it was vital to permanent recovery. I'm paraphrasing, right? But there's a paragraph in the very beginning of the book, like before you even know how to take somebody through the 12 steps, before Bill had even, like, you know, him and Bob ran around looking for alcoholics. So guess what happened? About 5 weeks sober, I get served with custody papers. Now, by the way, I should have lost custody of my children. I deserved to lose custody of my children. I was not being a good mom. But I'm 5 weeks sober, and I'm on the path, and I think, oh my God, I really want my babies. I want to keep my daughter so, so bad. I called Margarita because I don't know if you've ever done this, but I used to think my sponsor was my employee, right? She's supposed to be available every single time I want her, for as long as I want her, to listen to everything that comes out of my mouth, right? And pretty much just do what I want her to do, right? I found out that sponsorship is for fun and for free, right? She's not my employee. She's of service to me. And so most often she wasn't available to me right away. I'm self-centered, right? What do you mean? I should probably fire her, right? Who fires their sponsor? Like, come on. That's such crap, right? This relationship has been my longest term relationship. And there's been times I wanted to change. There's been times I wanted a different experience. But you know what? I learned how, I've had the courage in this relationship to tell her the truth about what I don't think is working for me. To let her know that I might want a different experience, maybe go through the steps with somebody else. My friend Donna one of these days is going to take me through the steps again. We keep talking about it, and it would be a privilege, right? But I don't have to quit my sponsor to accomplish all that. It's been the longest term relationship I've ever had through thick and thin. And it's amazing to learn how to do that in sobriety, right? So I'd call my sponsor. She wasn't available right away, but she would say this. I'm in the middle. I picked her also because she was a successful businesswoman, and I'm sure God made us a couple because of that. And so she'd be out of town all the time, and she'd say to me, hey, I don't have time right now. And I'd be like, I got to go to court, and I got to write an affidavit. I got big stuff going on, right? Shh, she'd say. Honey, you know, I know you're 5 weeks sober. Can you go to a meeting? Yeah, I'll go to a meeting today. She'd say, I want you to find a newcomer, take them for coffee, ask them how they're doing, and shut up. What the hell? I can't sponsor anybody. What are you talking about? She didn't ask you to sponsor anybody. I asked you to go to a meeting, grab a sponsor, or grab a newcomer, take them out for coffee, ask them how they're doing, and shut up. And you know what? From that day till this, that's how I get out of my head. It says, work with another alcoholic will solve everything. Everything. I don't always get there as in my default position, but most often I do. If I sponsor you, you are going newcomer shopping if you got shit going on in your life. Because it is always the solution. I didn't know that would work. I didn't know getting out of my head thinking about my problems was going to help me. I have the disease of self-centeredness and selfishness. I'm always thinking about me. Right? I've got to, please help me get out of my head. I will call my sponsees when something's happening and say, please tell me about you. Just tell me about you. What's going on in your life, right? They often don't have to call me. But you know what? My book doesn't say that they do. My book doesn't say that. It says I work with others so I stay sober. It says it's vital to my life. I've heard laundry lists in here. I've heard these lists. If you want me to sponsor, you got to do A, B, C, and D. Where the heck does it say that in our book? My God, you don't even have to want sobriety, and I will help you so that I stay sober. Because that's what my book says. And I believe that this is the tool to sobriety. I believe in it so much because it got this girl sober. And I will tell you, my life has been filled with ups and downs. Every single year of my sobriety, somebody precious to me has died. And I have not had to pick up a drink, nor have I been able, have I yelled at my children, you know, nor have I cheated on a partner. You know, we joke, we have a very similar story, so sorry, it might be something I heard from you, but it's a similar story. I've been single for 10 years, right? And I used to pray for, like, hey, God, I'm kind of lonely, right? And you know what happens when you do that? You get like 18 sponsees, right? It's like, dude, there's a disconnect, right? But God always knows what I need, right? The universe, my God, knows exactly what I need. And sometimes I might call my sponsor, I'd be like, do I have to say yes again? And she's like, your job is to say yes. God figures out the time. God figures it all out. Not everybody stayed sober, but I stayed sober. I have sponsees that will call me and they'll say, you know, my sponsee keeps going out or she's doing this. And I'm like, so? Did you stay sober? Yeah. Well, then that's why we're doing this. We hope you stay sober. I would walk on fire to help you stay sober. I really would. But I don't know if you're going to stay sober, but I got to do this work so I stay sober. So I stay connected with God. So I see the light every once in a while come on in somebody's eyes. I had a sponsee sit on my floor 4 years ago, Chelsea. And she said, I've been lying to my hubby. I've been taking drugs, and he's been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. I've been taking pills, and I really need your help. And I said, but I'm never, ever going to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I thought that was cute. So I said, no problem. No, he said, but you know, the only time I got is right before my home group. Could you meet me maybe at my home group and we could like get together for a half hour and we could find out what you're looking for and I'll share with you how much time I got. And so like whatever it takes, right? Con, cheat, get them into a rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And she came and like the next week she had a service position at my meeting, right? Because I told her, if you want what I have, you got to do what I did. I don't have any other story or way of getting, you're going to go newcomer shopping. You're going to frantically look for them on a regular basis. We're going to read this book a line at a time together, and I'm going to do it with you, right? We're going to actively do what it says in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to tell you if you should get in or out of a relationship, move in with him, get this job, not get this job. That is not, none of this says that. But you know what I will do? It says it in the book. If you need a job, I'm going to ask around and see if we can help you with that. You need a little money, I'm going to put a little money in the front of your pocket. Right? I don't know how you're going to use it, but it tells me in the book that we do this stuff. If you need a place to sleep and I feel like it's safe, you're going to come sleep on my couch. And that's what I've been taught to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm no saint. I have made more mistakes in the rooms of alcohol because you guys grew me up. I've actually been sober more than I haven't in my adult life, you know? More than I haven't in my whole life, right? I'm going to be 50 this year, and if that doesn't sound crazy to you, it sounds absolutely crazy to me. I wasn't supposed to live till 50, right? A couple years ago when I met Lee, my oldest daughter, who, by the way, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, wasn't speaking to me anymore with good reason. And I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I started to get sober, started to be of service, and I thought, she should talk to me. No. You know what? She doesn't need to talk to me. She never needs to talk to me again. That's her. That's up to her. What I need to do is, regardless of what, how she's treating me, and she called me regularly to tell me what she thought of me, right? I deserve that. And regardless of what she's doing, I have to be a good daughter or mother to her. Which meant when she called me, I listened to whatever she was throwing my way. Which meant that when she needed me, I showed up, even though yesterday she called me horrible names. Which meant that I went out of my way just to be a good mom. And it took about just over 2 years before she would talk to me again. And she stood up at my 7-year cake. And my current sobriety date is March 25th, 2007. And she stood up at my 7-year cake, and we let family speak at some meetings there. And I'd rather hear from family, to be honest. They tell the truth about what it was like. And she stood up and she said, if anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous is wondering if AA works, I hated my mother when she first came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was never going to speak to her again. And she said, I'm here to tell you that I love her more than anybody on the planet, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took time. I remember when I made my first amend to my mom, the mom I hated, the mom that hurt me in ways that offered my body up in ways that are despicable. And I was going through my first set of steps, and my sponsor didn't want to hear about what she'd done to me when I got to step 9. She wanted to find out if I was being a good daughter. Whoa. What do you mean? My mom did A, B, C, D. I can tell you why I don't talk to her anymore. Okay? And she said, no, no, no. Your job in that relationship is to be the best daughter you can be. And she, I said, how do I make an amend to her? Well, for what? Right? And I'd been a horrible daughter for many years to my mom. I had made her afraid. I had called her and been unkind. I had stolen from her. I had stolen her drugs. Like I was a bad daughter, okay? And she said, you're going to call your mom once a week, and you're going to ask her how she's doing, and you're going to shut up. And I did not want to do that. And it was hard and difficult and uncomfortable, right? Like disgustingly uncomfortable for me. But I wanted to stay sober more than I wanted to get drunk. And I believed in the course of action, and it would have to include step 9. It was going to have to include some difficult stuff. And I did that, and I will tell you, like I said at the beginning, I repeat it from the rafters. My mom is the best mom in the whole wide world. And that relationship repaired as a result of me commencing being a good daughter. And eventually we began to have a relationship. And she said, God, without the 12 traditions in our lives, we would not even be able to be in the same room, right? But we're really good at living all three parts of the triangle. I do not believe Alcoholics Anonymous is a 12-step program. I believe it's 12-step, 12-tradition, and 12 concepts, and I think it's really sad that we don't spend enough time teaching newcomers about the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, because they really, really are getting forgotten in our program. I don't know what it's like down here, but the 12 traditions have kept me together just as much as the 12 steps. They've allowed me to be in unity with you. They've allowed me to put you first. They've allowed me to remember why we do meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for the newcomer. They have kept me, you know, so on the straight and narrow, and I invite you to look up the guide that GSO puts out to go through a set of 12 traditions. It's flipping amazing, you know, and I absolutely love this program, and I'm just about done, but I do need to tell you that when I met Lee, and I was speaking at a conference in California, and thank you so much for asking me to come tonight. Really grateful. And at that time, my daughter was going through, the last few years have been very difficult for our family. About 4 years ago, my youngest daughter ended up in the hospital, and she got really, really, really sick, and she was in the hospital for about a year, 8 months totally, in and out, but then a full 8 months. And during that 8 months, I just started a new job, and my job requires me to be on the road 70-80% of the time. I'm always on a plane, and my oldest daughter picked up the ball because I couldn't be there every day, and she was triggered by that, and she felt resentful, and she felt like it was just the same old story again, and she stopped talking to me, and when I was speaking at that conference, she was pregnant with my first grandson, and she wasn't talking to me, and I knew that if I did what I had been taught to do and just continue to be sober, prayed to the God of my understanding, that eventually she may start speaking to me again. God would figure it out. Maybe this wasn't about me. Maybe this was about her healing, and I don't have to figure it out. And she started talking to me again about 3 months before she delivered that baby. And we started to gain a relationship again. And I was in the room when that baby was born. And because of midwife error, my grandson died that day. And I never, ever had experienced such pain in sobriety. And my faith got shattered because I held a baby that was 100% healthy, that she had made some bad calls and killed my grandson. And we had to leave him there. He was alive, he was born alive, and then he died. And it was the most horrific day ever for my child, for me, for my other daughter who was in the room. I hope none of that ever happens to you. But immediately, for the first time in my sobriety this time, I wanted to get out of these feelings. And I just thought, oh, I need a drink. I think I need a drink. Like, I don't even know how to do this. I had never lost a grandchild and been sober through that. And somehow, I got in my car and I was on the phone with my sponsor. And that's because it's been my default position. So she talked to me. I didn't want to hear nothing about God because I could not believe in a God. I could not believe that a God could do this to my child. She didn't deserve it. She had been good. I was bad. and I got two healthy babies. This doesn't make any sense to me. How could there possibly be a God and allow this to happen to this beautiful young girl that doesn't deserve this? And I didn't understand, and my sponsor talked to me till I could talk to a friend, and my friend came and sat with me that night and stayed with me so I could get another day sober. And they sat with me, and they wrapped their arms around me, and they helped me stay sober, but I didn't have any faith. I didn't, and I felt lost in Alcoholics Anonymous because I felt like it was all just fraudulent. I felt this is just crap. What am I doing? How do I not connect with a higher power? And then I was taught by Newton Bill. Remember how you found faith before? You woke up in the morning and you said, help. And at night when you put your head on the pillow, you said, thank you. And you went through this course of action, and it wasn't in the beginning, but it was in the end of going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that you found a higher power. And maybe it could work again. Maybe it could work again. And so I've been going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can stand before you today and tell you, I believe in a higher power. I don't really know what it is. It's changed. It's shifted. It's strong. I pray again. I don't feel like a fraud. But like I'm willing to do the work, right? I'm willing to not give up on my sobriety. My daughter and I are closer than you could ever imagine. And my second grandson is due. Our rainbow baby's coming the first week of June. And please pray for her because she's super scared. But we are so grateful, because had I been drunk or gotten drunk, I would miss it. I'd completely miss it. And I'm totally going down in history as the best grandma in the world, because I worked really hard to get here, and I don't need no badges and stuff, but I have a relationship with those kids that's beyond my wildest dreams. They love me. My 20-year-old will call me, because like I said, I'm out of town 70 to 80% of the time, and she's 20 years old, and she lives with me, she'll call me, I miss you, Mommy. She sends me texts that I show my colleagues all the time. Mommy, I miss you. When you're coming home, I want date night. Like, they love hanging out with me, right? That's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would have missed it. My grandmother died 3 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? She died about, I guess, 5 years ago now, right? But you guys put our family back together, and neither of my kids are alcoholic. How that happened, I have no idea, right? But neither of my kids are alcoholic. They both have a higher power in their lives. It's different for both of them, you know? I have a daughter that just converted to Islam. You know what? It's in the seeking. I don't know. Judgment and fear. I've never been taught that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's awesome she found a God of her understanding. It's so awkward for me sometimes. She wears a hijab. She's a 20-year-old little blonde girl, you know? But I don't judge it. I let her have her path, and I love her. You guys have taught me that. I have grace in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have the privilege of hanging out with one of my dear, dear friends that had a similar experience and was so there for me last year and there for my daughter, because to lose a child is something super unique. And I will forever be grateful for the opportunity to serve in Alcoholics Anonymous, the opportunity to fly to California and hang out with you all. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really, really grateful. And I want to thank you for having me. Thanks.